also want to be clear about what we're fighting for. We are fighting for universal health care that is a right and not a privilege for every American.
More news and more analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
From working families to small businesses or government agencies, it's important to have quality care for the cars and light trucks that are essential to getting the job done. Here in the North State, that means Advanced Automotive of Reading, where they pride themselves on old-fashioned honesty, quality personal attention, and personal responsibility to get the work done right the first time. Why else would they be able to offer a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty on their repairs? Every mechanic at Advanced Automotive is an ASC-certified master technician who takes pride in their work, something that's earned Advanced Automotive recognition from RepairPal.com, the leading provider of auto repair and maintenance information to consumers. From the family minivan, your daughter's first car, or a yard full of company vehicles, Advanced Automotive should be your go-to repair shop. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 5756 F Westside Road. Call 244-4423 or check the customer reviews at RepairPal.com.
Hello, once again, it's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
And I'm Alan Belongi.
We are analog, living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and tech news you could use. And we have been podcasting now, in addition to our radio broadcast on KCNR, for about 11 weeks. And it's been slow going on the downloads because we haven't really promoted it. I don't have a huge promotion staff. I don't have a huge research staff. I don't have any staff. It's me.
We are the staff.
Yeah. I had turned your mic down.
Yeah, because I was making creaky noises because I didn't like the angle the mic and the stand was.
So you've just heard the host of the show, who is also the producer of the show and the curator of the show and the editor of the show, talking to my other host here. So inside look.
Anyway. Hosts.
Hosts, yes. Anyway, the show, for those of you who are finding us on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or TuneIn Radio for the very first time, a little bit of background about why this show exists. There's a ton of tech shows out there. You've got Grumpy Old Geeks. You've got, of course, Leo Laporte's show, which is very long-standing. He's got a big staff. He's got literally hundreds of thousands of listeners.
Quite the staff to help.
We've got us, but we do the best we can. We look for stories that appeal to us. We talk about them. My background is I'm a broadcast producer and engineer of about 35-plus years. Content creator, about 35-plus years. So my first radio gig was 1979, actually.
Oh, you're dating yourself.
And so I have seen... I have seen this stuff go from 45 RPM records and reel-to-reel tapes to digital format, and it's been a heck of a great ride to see the changes. When this show first started, the iPhone had just come out. The iPad did not exist yet. So as this show has evolved, Boomer Tech Radio, during the 8 years now that it has been on KCNR in Northern California, we have watched quite a few tech things come up, and we've seen quite a few tech things flash and go away.
As they are wont to do.
For every iPhone, there's a whole bunch of miscues. There's a whole bunch of hoverboards for every iPhone.
Zune,
yes. In fact, I think they did a little poke at Zune in the Guardians of the Galaxy Chapter 2.
Everyone's listening to this. Yeah, sure they are.
Anyway, my son Alan is with us as well, and he brings us, well, he's not your typical millennial, but he is fairly tech savvy, and we roped him into this crazy business. And so if you like the tech show, you can, of course, write us at boomertechradio.com. That's the best email to use. And also check in on the website, boomertechradio.com, and it's boomertechradio@gmail.com, and I think I covered all the bases. Brenda, as I said, is a scientist of sorts. She is a scientist.
I'm an applied scientist.
An applied scientist. Not the type who wears white lab coats.
No.
Never find her in a white lab coat.
I didn't want to go on and do the PhD and research things. I wanted to go out there and do practical things.
Yeah, get out and get your hands dirty.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm an applied scientist.
Real things in the real world, not just theoreticals.
Exactly. Which, not that I don't have the greatest respect for folks that do that. That just wasn't my gig. I wanted to. I'm a real practical person, so I wanted to apply it.
Yeah.
So
your specialty is atmospherics and fire weather and all that good stuff.
Yep.
So.
Just weather forecasting in general.
So we bring a pretty broad. We're not industry insiders. We're not Uber geeks. We have a broad range of experience, a broad range of interests, and that's why we thought that this show would be a good idea. And hopefully enough people will think that the show is a good idea that they will subscribe and tell their friends to subscribe, and we won't get rich. Nobody gets rich podcasting.
Nobody gets rich in the media business. At this level.
You notice that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
It is.
It's a lot of fun.
We are having fun while we do this. So we're going through, and if you want to check some of the stories that we do curate through, we've created a magazine on Flipboard, which is this great aggregator. It pulls in articles from all over, and we flip through that to see what the latest news trends are. And the one that came right up to the top here, we predicted this on this show, that this had to happen.
We speculated.
Yeah. Momentum Machines out of San Francisco has just designed and is deploying a robotic system that can not only cook the patties, but dice up fresh toppings and put everything on a toasted bun. In other words, it makes 400 hamburgers an hour without human intervention.
And those burgers look better than what most of the minimum wage people churn out.
Well, I don't know. That's probably how a food stylist created. Because have you ever noticed those round table pizza pictures on the billboards? And you go get one of those? You look at the billboard and you look
a thing like that.
Look at the pizza in the box. That isn't what I ordered. Tell me how this is like that.
It's missing a few things.
Yeah, generally speaking. I mean, it's not like you don't know that when you go there, but yeah. So
be a food stylist burger.
Yeah, every time I see one of these things with food, and especially billboards, they're all liars. That's not what it looks like.
Yeah. So Momentum Machines is going to open a restaurant near Moscone Center. They will have a couple of humans in the vicinity to do things like, you know, calibrate the machinery, keep it sanitary, and things like that. But I'm sorry not to be savage about it, but all you people who walked around with placards saying that a $15 an hour entry-level burger job should be your career, guess what? It went away.
Because you aren't generating $15 worth of revenue for this store.
Exactly. And the people, the very wise people who thought that this was a great way to buy votes, they did not think this thing all the way through.
So here's the thing,
or they just didn't care.
Exactly.
That's another option.
They're not saying exactly how much one of these individual robots would cost.
About $30,000.
Well, they imply it's around $30,000, but think about this. A $30,000 robot would very quickly pay for itself.
Because it works 24/7. It doesn't take smoke breaks. It doesn't get sick days.
Doesn't need benefits.
You don't have to pay payroll taxes.
Yeah, there are no workman's comp.
Yeah.
None of that stuff. I mean, it just works and works and works, and it doesn't care. It also doesn't get upset.
It also doesn't spit in your burger.
Yeah, or pick up things off the floor and put it in there or something like that, right?
You know, I have met some very nice people who work in the
Absolutely.
Food service industry. And then I've had to actually go back and say, wait a minute, I'm spending my money here. Look me in the eye, damn it. They shove the bag out the window while they're looking off to the off in the distance.
Not to mention that they mess up the order, like not putting stuff in it that you paid for.
Yeah.
Right. So the interesting thing about this is that let's say you don't want mayonnaise, you want extra pickles or something like that. You could order it that way, and the machine will dutifully make the thing happen the way you want it. So what is it? Burger King says have it your way. And then, well, the machine can, you know, definitely do that and be very consistent, doesn't make a mistake. Now, if you get something you don't like, it is the customer's fault, right, unless the machine malfunctions. But yeah, if the machine made it as ordered, then, you know, the customer has to eat crow, so to speak.
Right. And an interim to this is going to be, instead of people on the counter taking the money and taking the order and punching it in, you're going to have a kiosk.
Yep.
I actually came in, cost one of those when I went over to England. I just went to a McDonald's there, and they had the kiosk set up, so I just walked up to a screen, punched what I wanted, fed it my pounds, and then later walked up to the counter after it called my number, and I picked it up from the dude up there.
The interesting thing to me about this is that there's no human interaction, which isn't always a pleasant event at the fast food things. Like the gal that tried to rush my order, I said, I'm not done yet, you know,
and
then still didn't listen. So that was not a good customer experience. But it's not that there's going to be no jobs in these facilities, because, of course, health codes and things like that are going to require that those machines be cleaned periodically. You know, if it's a 24/7 operation, you have to have some of them offline to clean them, restock them, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. They haven't invented the robots for that yet.
Right.
And although I imagine that they will, so you drive up to this thing and it's a rather impersonal, it's like a vending machine.
Yeah.
Is really where it's headed. But the other side of this is
you get a consistent product.
Exactly. Your quality control is very tight. So if someone is expecting to have XYZ taco and that's what they like, they're going to get it that way, exactly that way every time.
And that's sort of, you know, why does Starbucks burn their coffee? It's because it'll taste the same no matter which of the Starbucks you happen to go into.
Well, and it hides poor quality beans,
too. Hides relatively cheap beans.
Yes. There's that sort of thing,
too. You tell them I'm not a fan, you know.
plus, you know, all the other stuff they add in there kind of mess it all anyway.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. I just want a damn cup of coffee. Although I'm sitting here sipping there's a local chain up here called Dutch Bros that's regional. And I'll go there long before I'll set foot in a Starbucks. You know, no insult intended. Maybe I hope they're not planning on they don't sponsor any podcasts that I'm aware of.
Oh, well, even if they did, they're not sponsoring this particular edition.
They're definitely not.
I think vicariously they do, mm-hmm. you know, by fueling the hosts.
Yeah. It could be.
And how long before, and there's talk about robotic baristas.
Well, sure. Another very consistent product. That's one of the reasons that I'm convinced that when you go to Starbucks that there is no creativity.
They already act like robots.
Well, not that so much as that there's no creativity allowed. Their beverages are the way they are. You can't get custom-made ones like you can at Dutch Bros, for instance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it is all a matter of customer preference. But I do know that in a small town nearby where a Starbucks opened up, the local, little local homegrown coffee booth took a hit for about 2 weeks, and then everybody came
back.
People
drifted back.
Yeah, they did. They're as busy as ever.
The novelty wore off.
Yeah, and people find them, you know, online, and so they have out-of-towners that find them. And
the Starbucks,
it's good stuff.
Will cater to the freeway traffic.
Right.
Because people get the...
Well, it's a known quantity for folks.
There are Starbucks fanboys or fangirls, just like there are Apple fanboys.
Sure, or Dutch Bros.
And sometimes if you're just driving through, you just want something you know, and you don't want to, like, take a risk at, you know, shot in the dark. Who knows what this place is like?
But, you know,
unless you're in Bakersfield.
Oh, yeah. We bypass that town as much as we can. Very bad customer experiences.
We got a bad
Starbucks. True, but that is not the only bad customer experience in Bakersfield that we've had. So it's like, I just try to stay out of there. Sort of like Elko, Nevada. If I can avoid doing business in Elko, I do. It's just a thing with me. The thing about it is, though, getting back to technology, when you're traveling like that, Bob and I have the greatest fun getting online and discovering the local places, the little, you know, off the track or the, you know, kitschy or whatever. And you can easily find those.
Show me the nearest restaurants.
Right. Yeah. And then you just kind of rifle through that. And most of the time you can get on Yelp and, you know, have some feel for what other people think of these things. Mm-hmm. And pick something that's like, oh, that sounds like our style. And you go, and it's like, oh, that was fun. You know, it's far from the standard. I mean, that's part of, I think, going to a place you've never been before or somewhere where you don't live is to find those things that are a little more local and have a little more local flavor.
Yeah. But more and more people can simply say, okay, Google, hey, Siri, Alexa, what is, you know, where's the nearest place to eat?
Speaking of that, so the other day I needed to make a grocery list, and I really did not want to pick up a piece of paper and a pen. I had to fiddle around with it a little bit. So it's
60s.
oh, no, that's handy, but you lose them and drop them or something like that, right? You're not likely to drop your or lose your phone. I mean, I'm rather attached to it. Kind of paranoid about that, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I thought, that's fun. I asked Bob, I said, how does this work? He says, oh, let me try it. Oh, it worked on his phone. I actually had to download the app. For some reason, I didn't have
keyboard,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like, fine. And so we started experimenting with it, made a list, and I found that you have to speak pretty continuously. It's like, okay, Google, and it says listening. It said, add eggs, cheese, milk, and biscuits to my grocery, or make a grocery list, and it'll say, okay, what's on the list? Eggs, cheese, milk, biscuits. Don't pause, or it'll stop. But if something occurs later, which it did.
Add to my list.
Yeah, it's like, okay, Google, add to my grocery list. And then it's like, okay, listening. And then you add on those things that I actually will add on the list. Not only that, there's a little checkbox there so that if you have it in the basket.
You just poke it.
Just poke it and it disappears.
Yeah.
Now, that's handy. I like that because I'll, rather than take the time to write it down, which has its value, it was a whole lot easier to use the app on the smartphone, which was doing everything but being a phone, and my smart device, and it worked really well. I was surprised. So we started messing around with it and kind of being goofy, using weird words or accents, and it does amazingly well in voice recognition.
And that was the thing they pointed out at CES, is that just in the last 5 years, they've made more advances in, last 3 years, yeah, they have made more advances in voice recognition than they have in the previous 30.
Right.
To the point where voice recognition systems are currently on a par with another human being.
Right. In other words, me talking to you.
In terms of words, well, maybe that's correct.
Like, I think can understand someone with a Jersey accent better than I could, probably.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Need a translator.
You get someone from Texas and someone in Maine in the same room, and it's like, what?
I was going to use the example that's as good as the understanding that you and I have talking to each other, but you could enter the gender differences in between that, and that might not be so good. But but in reality, two people talking to each other, never mind gender.
Two average people conversing.
Right. And then you mishear things, and it's like, what did you say? Or you said something the other day, and I was like, what? You know, what I thought I heard and what was said are two different things.
Right. So the AI systems are improving rapidly, and pretty soon, I imagine in a fast food or noisy environment, you're always going to use a touch screen type interface rather than a vocal interface.
I disagree. I think if they can hear you through that nasty microphone speaker system that they have at Taco Bell, Burger King, Carl Jr., any of them, right?
If you're in the drive-thru.
Popeyes, whatever, your drive-thru, then surely they can design something, you know, microphone technology well enough to know that you could say, okay, device, you know, okay, BurgerBot, this is what I want. And it could type it out on a screen for you. And you could see that, or it could verbally repeat it back like the human does. And it's like, no, reset. Is the order on your screen correct? Or this is what it says if you have 508 compliance. Of course, nobody would be in a drive-thru if they can't see. Well, they could be, I mean, but they wouldn't be the driver. And although I don't know, in an autonomous car, will that work? It could.
Quite possibly.
Yeah, so.
Send the car out for a burger.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Well, more than likely, they'll integrate some sort of connectivity to
everybody's
phone. So you just download an app and you send it off the order to whatever.
Either text the order or voice record the order. And exactly.
Well, as it is right now.
You would do that right away. The technology for that exists with no problem.
With these Amazon and Walmart kiosks, you have an app on your phone, and you punch in your order, and I'm going to be there at 5:45 on my way home, and it's waiting for you.
Well, the grocery store, one of the grocery stores we frequent, you can download their app, scan the UPC codes, get to the front counter, and you know, there's a reader there thing, and boom, it's already tallied up for you. Mm-hmm. So to me, there's some risk in that shoplifting is possible, mm-hmm. but I don't see too many people doing it, actually, because I don't want the store gathering that kind of data with the app.
Exactly. But, what data is being gathered
right.
on you? All of it possible.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's the thing. These
is my insurance carrier going to be informed that I've just gotten six cases of Haagen-Dazs?
Well, yeah, no kidding. Yeah, well, maybe it's a gift for somebody or it's a party. They can never judge these things, right? You don't have to justify the purpose of six pints of Ben and Jerry's. Anything's a justification for that, right? But I could see also an extension, Alan, of what you were saying is that you have an account, if you will, mm-hmm. and you have consistent orders that you make. And so you log on, or here you have your personal identification, and I want my number one choice, or, well, maybe I feel like my combination number two today. And you just, bing, there it is. All preset.
That's like my friend who has Domino's set up on his computer. He hits, like, four buttons, and he orders the same thing. He orders every time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
He just comes to his
order. So sort of a dash button for pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, like an Amazon dash button for pizza.
If you get that set up for groceries, which I'm sure still exists, it just will become more and more popular. You just punch the button, you get your milk, eggs, whatever.
Right.
Well,
either delivered to you or you go pick them up.
Well, Samsung's new refrigerator was supposed to, they were ahead of their time, and the whole idea of having to chuck your refrigerator because, all your food spoils because the operating system crashes.
happens when it goes crazy and it orders you six dozen eggs?
Yeah.
You know, there's a boo-boo and it's every day it's ordering the same thing.
But they were talking about, you know, it would notice when you were out of milk. It
right.
would scan the interior and at least put it up on the screen, on the flat screen, that you're out of eggs. Do you want to order more?
Well, one would hope that it would verify that instead of automatically ordering because...
Maybe you're going on vacation.
Yeah, maybe you're going on vacation or something or... last week you ordered three dozen because you're going to be doing some Christmas baking or something like that.
It might be Easter.
Yeah, it might be Easter. And I could see all sorts of intrusive things with that where it tries to market stuff to you.
Oh, well, yeah.
Oh, I noticed you haven't done this. Or would you like to try this new brand of yogurt?
I get that on my Facebook feed.
Anything
that I look at on Amazon, even if it's just, well, I wonder if they even sell this thing. Boom, it's in my Facebook feed the next day. Want to buy this? No, if I'd have wanted to buy it, I'd have bought it.
Not really.
Yeah, it's like that way. On the other hand, you know, there's a lot of fun things, too. You did a recent research, Google search, Bob, on vacation locations.
Yes.
And kabing, boom, there was exactly what
pretty much what we were
had in mind,
for,
narrowed it down.
By the way, for those of you who are really into Airbnb, that's nice. We're kind of partial to VBRO.
VRBO.
VRBO.
Yeah, Home Away, Vacation Rental by Owner, for a number of reasons, and I think I've talked about that before because...
Airbnb is really hip, but VRBO, I think, has
they're different. They have and actually some folks list on both, same facilities, so... we stayed in a place on the Oregon coast that one time, and they were listed on both B&B and VRBO. Friends of ours who do quite a bit of home exchange thing, they belong to a club and have done Airbnb. They say they've had mixed experiences. Most of them have been okay.
Yeah.
And then we talked to a property manager owner one time that they had a lousy Airbnb experience. From a customer, Airbnb customer, and they took themselves off Airbnb. So you don't have as many guarantees or securities on Airbnb, as I understand it, as you do on something like VRBO. If there is a facility, a property that's listed on VRBO, you can have pretty good confidence that it's a real thing. It really does exist.
Yeah, we were told that we were approved, which means there has to be some kind of vetting process.
Well, yeah, they may do a search on there and find out if we say nasty things about properties or something, but... maybe it's just the way I wrote the note that she was impressed with how I put ahead of time that we have a dog and because it's a pet approved facility they're considered and we kennel her when we're not around that way she can't get in trouble and we scoop poop.
Yep.
And so that always is that's almost always that and noise making are the only three things that people are really worried about in the with pets.
Real quick before we take the breaks, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour. Story I read on Facebook, a family in Hawaii had their 55-inch Samsung smart TV stolen. The device was recovered after the thieves unwisely logged on to Netflix with the account that was already active on the TV, thereby signaling the television's location.
Yeah, good job there, guys.
There's a slight lack of understanding about how these things work, right?
It's Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda and Alan. More of the tech news you can use right after this.
Serves them right.
Good, honest, reliable. More than two decades ago, an auto repair shop opened in Reading based on those simple principles. Advanced Automotive is still family-owned, continuing on with those same ideals. So simple, yet rare in today's world. Modern cars and light trucks have grown more complex in the past 20-plus years, but those founding concepts still hold just as much importance when it comes to safety, reliability, and value for your dollar. Advanced Automotive of Reading promises that your vehicle will be serviced confidently by a technician with the training and knowledge to make professional repairs. Read what your friends and neighbors have to say about Advanced Automotive by going to RepairPal.com, where you can get an instant estimate of what you can expect to pay for your service or repair. Honest work at a fair price. It's not all that complicated. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 244-4423, or stop by 5756 F West Side Road.
It's the final day for another Blue Jean County night as the Shasta District Fair gates open at noon today.
Tri-Counties Bank sponsors the annual Junior Livestock Auction at 8 a.m. Come support the North State's best and brightest as they auction the animal they've hand-raised for the past months, plus the silent auction with fabulous handmade items from benches to barbecues and much more. Bud and Bud Light bring auto racing to the grandstand starting at 7:30 p.m., plus trivia, hypnotist Kelly Carl, Jeremy the Juggler, Kids Corner with live stingrays and Puzzle Mania, Cornhole Tournament at 3 p.m., and Honky Tonk Boombox, 8:30 on the Sierra Nevada stage.
Gates open till midnight.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
Have you found yourself stranded with a dead battery and need a jump? Instead of calling that expensive tow truck, call Reading Yellow Cab and they'll do it for only $20. Running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year, Reading Yellow Cab will cater to the needs of your parents, seniors, or children who need to travel throughout the city and county no matter the hour. Call Reading Yellow Cab and they'll do your shopping, give rides to the hospital, airport, hotel, and many other destinations. Call them at 222-1234.
If you are running your own business, you already know that if there are 1,000 items on your to-do list, you really have 3,000 things to get done. Success in business is in the details. You need help. Let the smart professionals at Five Star Bank help you take care of those financial details. Yes, smart people doing good business. Life is 10% of what happens to us and 90% of how we react to it. Be positive. Those at the top of the mountain did not fall there. Visit us at Five Star Bank and let us show you how we specialize in emerging business and commercial real estate. Five Star Bank also specializes in hard work, working hard for those that believe that success is just on the other side of the next opportunity. Thomas Jefferson was a great believer in opportunity, for he found that the harder he worked, the more he had of it. Your time is as valuable as your success. So visit us at Five Star Bank, 358 Hartnell in Reading, or call Eric Woodstrom at 223-6652. Online at fivestarbank.com. Five Star Bank, professional, progressive, and personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Here's some energy savings tips from REU, Reading's electric utility. Air conditioning is a significant part of your electricity cost in the summer. Setting your thermostat to 78 degrees maintains good balance between comfort and energy use. But did you know you can save up to 10% on your cooling costs for every 2 degrees you raise your thermostat? For more energy saving tips, visit us at reupower.com or call 339-7200. REU and you, powerful together.
It takes you to your place of work. It gets your kids to school, practice, recitals, and to visit friends and relatives. It takes you on your adventures, and it brings you home again safely. It's your car or light truck, and for most of us, it's our second biggest investment. So when your vehicle needs routine maintenance or major repairs, it just makes sense to go with the very best. Here in Shasta County, that means one thing, Advanced Automotive. Advanced Automotive is Redding's only shop that's listed on RepairPal.com, part of a nationwide network of shops that are regularly evaluated for superior training, guaranteed fair prices, and excellent customer reviews. And Advanced Automotive backs up their work with something you won't get anywhere else, a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty. Don't just take my word for it. Log on to RepairPal.com, enter your make, model, and zip code, and read what your friends and neighbors have to say. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Redding, 244-4423.
Back, LumberTech Radio, the tech news you can use, goodies, gadgets, and gizmos with Bob and Brenda and Alan. Of course, BoomerTechRadio@gmail.com. And hopefully at some point in the future, we're going to be letting people know exactly when we're going to pre-record the show so that we can take calls via Skype. So, Alan, you come in usually loaded for bear. And what did you bring us this week?
Have you heard of an E3? It's Electronic Entertainment Expo. It's essentially the biggest video game expose in the country. It's been for a long time designed for industry insiders,
right?
You know, like developers or whatever come there to check out what's going on, and then they broadcast the information or news or whatever about upcoming games or game consoles or whatever. But this, it's had a bit of a decline in the past decade or so. Just it hasn't been very popular as much as it has been. But this year, actually, attendance went up over 30% compared to last year. Last year had attendance of about 50,000. This year went up to about 68.
Why?
Just more people being more interested in the recent developments in the gaming industry. A lot of it probably has to do with the success of Nintendo's new console, the Switch, and then a lot of more excitement coming out about the new version of the Xbox that was going to become unveiled.
Console games are now nobody's come out with a super hot in that I've noticed aside from Witcher and the revamp of Skyrim and a few others. There hasn't been a super duper killer PC game. There's a bunch of stuff for consoles that'll never be off of console. And not too many years ago, people were predicting the death of the console because it was all going to be on PCs.
No, consoles market share is definitely the biggest of, like, regular old gamers, if you want to call them that. I mean, the phone market has been cutting into PC and consoles a lot, the mobile games or whatever, but there's still plenty of people that don't, myself included, don't really consider this stuff on a phone like real games. They're
you only do so much on 5 inches of screen real estate.
Right. They're fairly shallow. They're generally full of microtransactions, which make you have to buy little advantages in the game.
Yeah.
And so none of it offers any sort of depth of what you can get from a real kind of game that you'd play.
Ain't no Skyrim.
Right. So that has to do with a lot of it. Just a lot more excitement about things of where the industry is actually heading recently.
So it wouldn't involve necessarily VR, virtual reality, or AR, augmented reality?
Oh, it does. Yeah, that's a lot of the things that it's still pretty early in, like, you know, the whole life cycle of VR, but that really wasn't a big focus this time.
So it was traditional on, you know, immersive screen, but you're still sitting in front of a screen, even if it's slightly curved or dual screens.
With a controller in hand, generally. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, one of the things that increased its attendance this year is they actually started selling tickets to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
Like, since it's an insider thing, most everyone before that had gone was all developers or news media or whatever reporting on it. But this time they offered up 15,000 tickets to general public, and they were all sold out immediately upon being offered.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. So this is one where the...
So how many of it was just people hoping to get free stuff?
There is a lot of free goodies given out. Yeah. But
We came back from CES with a tabletop full of stuff.
Yeah, but so unlike Consumer Electronics Show or CES, the general public is allowed into this one. Yeah.
Right.
A percentage of the tickets are for general public.
Yeah, it's one of the first ones that was allowed... one of the first times they allowed general public to buy tickets.
That right there, I think, is a good indicator of why attendance went up 30%, because it's like this is this verboten thing, right? I don't pronounce the word right, but open it up to the public, and there would be a lot of interest in that, and people would say, oh, goody, an opportunity to go. I'm sure that the other reasons you stated are valid as well.
Right.
But the public participation, but that could be good because, you know, they get a sense of what's out there. Folks that are there can get some feedback from people immediately, because it's interesting at CES where there's a lot of vendors there, particularly over there in the Innovation Park.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there's a lot of Kickstarters and things like that. GoFundMes and whatever, they're very interested in your immediate feedback on their products and what they're trying to do.
But even excluding the public tickets they sold, the attendance from
industry
was still up.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Last year.
That's good.
Not too long ago, PlayStation was in trouble. Sony was in trouble. Looks like they're reestablishing themselves as a still the number two platform, right?
Well, it's the number one platform, really.
Is it
PlayStation 4?
Okay.
Yeah, the PlayStation 4.
I thought the Xbox would help.
Oh, no. Right now, between the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, which are the two leading consoles, the PlayStation 4 has about 60 million sold units, and the Xbox One has about 30.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. Yeah, so right now PlayStation...
See, I don't follow that close.
Right. Right now, the PlayStation definitely has an advantage in overall sales, which the more consoles out there, the more potential people that would buy, you know, a game that you would release on that console.
Right, right.
The,
now, modern consoles are connected to the internet as part and parcel of their operation. In fact, some games have to be connected to the internet or you can't do much of anything.
Right, if it's an online-only game. Because some games don't even have a component of the game where you can play by yourself offline.
Okay.
It would be interesting to know if the demographic of who is playing has changed as well, because folks that are now, you know, in their later 20s and early 30s, they started playing games when they were little kids.
Right. I'm sure overall the total, like, age bracket has gone more older as the industry has evolved.
But different kinds of games would appeal to different ages, of course. So
for sure.
Maybe there's a bit of a revival in that is like, ooh, yeah, I used to do this as a kid. You know, and I'm going to introduce my kid to this. That happens too.
Right. And as the industry goes further, there's going to eventually be the kids that grew up on things like Angry Birds on their parents' iPad or whatever, which is going to turn into a whole different demographic in 20 years.
Yeah, there's Twitch shooters, but there's also cinematic storyline type games that are, you know, you're basically involved in a
character,
movie.
Yeah,
a character, like, you know, Fallout or the Far Cry series, or, of course, Skyrim, or the whole Elder Scrolls series, as a matter of fact. You take a heroic role, and it gets to where the gameplay is like a cutscene used to be.
Yes, sometimes a lot of games do have the gameplay segments almost as secondary compared to the story segments within it, which I'm not a huge fan of that style, but a lot of people, it appeals to plenty of people, so.
Yeah. Of course, and a lot more and more games are open-ended in that you don't have to follow the game through on rails. You can go off and snoop on things.
Yeah, there's a lot of open-world games these days where it's not, I made it to level 4 or whatever, which hasn't really been a game thing for quite a while.
Yeah. Well, you gain experience and you gain ability, but that's not the end-all. The end-all is to achieve the story. Well, so there was some new hardware. Anything else out of E3?
Well, one thing that came out was there was a game that it was essentially like soccer with RC cars. That's not really an important part. But they'd really been promoting cross-platform play where the Xbox players would be able to play with people that were playing on the new Switch, which would be able to play with people on the PC. And the developers of the game couldn't get Sony to go in on it.
Aww.
And it's pretty lawyerly reasons as to why Sony wasn't playing ball with cross-platform play, but it really was just seen as kind of a cop-out. What their excuse was, it's like, oh, we can't really regulate, you know, the online experience if we had people playing with, like, other consoles or whatever.
In other words, they couldn't monetize it.
Yeah, so...
Or get data from it to monetize it.
So they're... That was a bit of a hit from...
I'm cynical about that.
There was a bit of a hit against Sony in a lot of people's minds for not even going forward.
That could turn around and bite them, though, because if everybody else is able to take part in some sort of massive multiplayer situation, except for those who stuck with Sony.
Ooh, yeah, that is not going to be...
And the sheer weight of numbers, Sony may find themselves in a position where they go, you know, we probably should have thought that one through a little further.
At the moment, this particular game has the most number of players on the PlayStation console, so it's hard to say whether it'll bite them in the butt, but people don't really like them for their excuses as to not allow cross-play like that.
Yeah, I got it. Think that stuff out.
Yeah. So, as you said, not a lot of VR in the gaming world yet. The content is still coming, and the whole idea is to be able to do a gaming experience without throwing up.
Right.
So, if you're moving around, thrashing around like you would be in a game situation, there's a lot of super fast action. Still, the hardware for virtual reality and augmented reality isn't fast enough or smooth enough to make it a good experience. It doesn't cause sensory problems for the recipient. However,
and the computer needed to do that would be incredibly expensive.
Right. But if you have a fairly static scene that's calming, say something like an ocean or a forest or something along those lines, for somebody who is in an unpleasant situation, let's say a dentist chair. Now, I've always said that the dentist needs to have a flat screen mounted on the ceiling right above the chair.
And how many dentists...
And a set of headphones.
There's posters posted up there.
Yeah.
Ooh, a poster.
Well, you know, I mean, analog isn't always bad. It's cheap, and it's better than counting dots in that perforated ceiling tile in commercial buildings,
popcorn
right?
Popcorn ceiling.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in the United Kingdom, researchers wanted to see if VR could ease patients' pain and anxiety. They asked 79 people who needed a tooth pulled or cavity filled. The subjects were divided into three groups. One viewed a VR coastal scene, one a VR city, and one no virtual reality at all.
Which is what most of us have.
Folks who viewed the ocean experience said they had significantly less pain that they noticed than the other two groups, shows its therapeutic potential for stressful events. Now, we've been saying this for years on this show.
Well, what?
That immersive environments can help you if you're in an unpleasant situation, a dentist chair. Can, you know, take me away, Calgon Bouquet, you know, help you. And the same thing for people who spend lots and lots of time in cube farms. Or very stressful situations, they want to go home and slap on the goggles and be taken to the primeval forest.
True. You know, this whole thing seems incredibly obvious, and this article is posted on, help me here, Flipboard.
Engadget.
Yeah, it came from Engadget. What is interesting about this story, though, is that it seems incredibly obvious, right, that VR would be distracting.
Yeah.
But the expectation is that it was going to be similar such as a television, but that proved not to be the case. What they found out in their research is that it was even more distracting because your field of view is like being there, if you've ever tried VR. And it showed that they connected more with the imagery in there, in this particular case, if they were like nature scenes, which is typically, they know from psychological studies, a very calming type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it really did not work as well as television. But what I would like to know is, did they put that same scene on a television? But it would make sense, because the thing about VR that's so interesting...
It blocks out everything.
It blocks out everything, and that is your visual experience.
Right. You're not looking at a box with nature on it. You're tricking your eyes.
You're fooling your brain
into
thinking that you're actually there. That's what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And because you can move your head around... And it's like looking out a window or something like that. And it, whereas television, you don't have that option. Whatever scene is presented is the one that you see. But yep. VR is not like that. So this is kind of interesting. I just hope they don't get crazy and put something in there where you start trying to touch things or poke things or point at things. That would be really bad in a dentist chair. That is not a good idea to be moving around.
Well, yeah, you don't want to move your head in general.
Well, yeah.
And you can't, that's going to make you duck.
Yeah, and you can't take them on a roller coaster ride or some nausea-inducing type of event like that. So, and this is not a new concept. A couple of years ago, my mom had some major surgery. And in the pre-op room, there was a little screen up in the corner where while you're laying in the hospital bed there. With IVs in your arm or whatnot, you can see the screen. And there were a number of very calming nature scenes on there. There was one where this moose was munching away in the little pond or whatever. And there was no audio with it. But I could see the potential for this right. to pipe in the audio of the birds singing and all this wonderful stuff that makes the experience even more real as if you were standing there or sitting there looking out the window. And if you think about this, your brain is distracted.
Yeah.
It's like meditating or, maybe even doing yoga, anybody that's familiar with that. But you get into a different state of mind, and it takes your mind off of where the irritation, the pain is. You're not focused on that particular
right,
place, because
right.
when you're focused on that particular place, it amplifies the pain that you're feeling.
But feedback loop.
Yeah, it's like a feedback loop. So if you're staring at something, and it's like, oh, yeah, I know that pain's there, but this is interesting, too. You're not giving it as much attention, and therefore you don't experience its full impact.
Yeah. What I found really interesting about that article was that they also did that, one of the scenes they were testing out was in a city.
Yeah.
And it was a lot less effective when they were showing them in a city environment.
I think it's because if people live in a city, they may feel like they're there, and so then they, have to avoid people or whatever. Cityscapes can be interesting, but maybe it's because your mind's a little more busy or whatever. But if you're at the ocean, then it's relaxing for most people.
Right. So, but it's not just tricking your brain into thinking you're not in the dentist chair. It's
right.
not just that.
No, that's true.
Evoking feeling.
Right. Right. That's what I said. It takes
calm
your
feeling.
Takes your brain to a different place that doesn't focus on being there in the chair. So yeah, Zen moments, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What a cool idea though, because a lot of people don't like to go to the dentist.
Well, I don't think anybody likes to go
afraid. Well, I can't say as I like to go. It would certainly prevent you having to listen to the person ask you questions when they have stuff in your mouth. How are you supposed to answer that?
Yeah. House of fishing.
Having to listen to a one-way conversation of topics that you're really not all that interested in, nor can you respond to because they're working on you, right?
Yeah, I would
definitely plug into this VR thing. I think that's a great idea. We'll have to mention that to our dentist. He's a techie.
He will.
He'd like that.
Yeah. Well, I noted in a waiting room when we were at a hospital, they were actually doing reruns of Sunrise Earth,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty early in the days of HD. It was used as a high-definition showcase program.
That's where they had it defaulted, but you could have changed channel if you wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't like it was fixed and you couldn't change the channel. Yeah.
But that was the one that was on, and it was, if you've never looked it up, I'm sure it's available online now.
Probably.
Sunrise Earth.
It's ridiculous how you can spend a whole hour watching nothing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They it's pick pretty. Yeah.
It is.
It is.
It's very nice.
Just pretty.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice.
Sometimes we need just pretty.
Well, yes, and they also, I remember one episode, they were in a garden, I believe, somewhere in China, and the folks were out there doing their Tai Chi in the mornings. And there were lots of people around. It was kind of a cityscape, but it was a park in a city. And it was surprisingly calming, even though it was kind of busy. There were people doing things. And you were watching the activity, but it would be like sitting on a park bench. But how cool would that be in VR? That would be kind of neat.
Yeah.
That's better than watching
TV. Or the fishermen with their cormorants.
Yeah, the fishermen with the cormorants. That was cool. And then see that in VR, that would be really cool.
Yeah. You take the 360 camera and stick it under the water.
You're sitting there simulating scuba diving.
Yeah, yeah, or your own very own submersive bubble. Well, we are watching a lot more video than ever before on our mobile devices, and more people are watching movies, full-length movies, on a mobile device. Now, if you've got a cellular connection, cellular data connection, it doesn't take a whole lot of movies to just eat your data plan.
I'm sure a lot of that's going on via Wi-Fi.
Yeah, one would hope so, because if you're just tootling, unless you've got a pretty bodacious data plan, watching a lot of movies is going to cost you.
Even the so-called limitless data is not exactly limitless.
Yeah.
They throttle the rate at what you get stuff, so you get frustrated and don't use as much, or you can't use as much because you can't use it as quickly. Right, it's too slow. Along that line, and this is I think, a very misleading article title in here from Mashable, where it says Netflix has a hidden limit on the number of times you can download stuff. And, you know, it's like read the fine print. Everybody's going to say, you know, do you agree? Yeah, because if you don't agree to that stuff, you're not going to be able to use the services like iTunes or, or Netflix or what have you. You should know that if you download a movie, say you may only have 48 hours to watch it or 5 days or something like that, and then you're locked out of it.
Right, right.
And if so, it's not like you get to download it and keep it indefinitely.
Right. Some movies you can – it depends on the deal that was made with the studio. Some movies you don't have any restriction at all as long as you've still got an active membership. Some movies you can hold for up to a week or maybe even 30 days. But once you start watching it, the clock starts ticking and you have to finish watching it within the 2 days.
However, and this does you know, there is apparently an actual number of times you could download something. So if your three-year-old wants to watch Finding Nemo 14 times, you may want to rethink that. And this is not all Netflix fault, according to this article, because the content provider...
It's the
studio that puts that limit on it in the digital rights management. Netflix doesn't own most of the shows and movies that it provides. It obviously, it would own its own content that they're producing, but there may be a limit on the number of times a title can be renewed or viewed from the content provider, not Netflix.
Right.
And if you want to know more about that, there's information on the Netflix site in their help section, but it doesn't tell you, there's no clarification or indication
right.
when you download something, if it's a title that has limits or what the limits are. And it may be, you know, they can tell who is downloading from the point of view that is the device.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you've asked for this 15 times. Sorry, you know, your limit is up.
Hey, go buy the darn movie.
Yeah, and so I wonder if they make a time frame for that, too. So let's say you watch it this week, and then you know, just like, that was so good, I got to have my friends over and watch it again. Is there a time separation? You know, what do they do? Or what if I watched it this year, then next year, does that... They keep track of all that?
Or maybe the movie was running and you left the room for some reason, and the movie ran and it was like, oh, man. You know,
yeah.
Or the phone rang and you didn't pause it.
Right, and it played through and you weren't there to see it, so you got to download it again to finish watching it or whatever.
That was a big problem a couple of years ago with that system they called DivX, where once you started watching a disc...
Oh, you couldn't pause it?
Well, you could pause it, but you could only watch it like... two times through or something, and then the disc turned into a coaster.
Right, that was the way to rent out movies without having to return them.
Right.
Gotcha. So, you know, if you wanted to watch it 10 times in your rental time, then you couldn't do that.
Right.
It would turn into a bird scare for your garden.
A skeet target.
Yeah.
But whatever limit that is that Netflix and or the content producer puts on there, I can't imagine it's, like, low enough to really affect the majority
Most
of people.
Most people, yeah. Like,
I would think so.
And since it's a family with a kid that wants to watch Finding Nemo
15 times.
8 million times.
Yeah. Go buy the DVD.
That's the best way to do it.
Yes.
Dirty Dancing.
Whatever.
We wore a videotape out when I was... had some kids in the house, and they... Oh, it was crazy.
Had to watch it a million times.
Yep. Well, that's going to close out this hour of Boomer Tech Radio. It's Bob and Brenda saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other.
From working families to small businesses or government agencies, it's important to have quality care for the cars and light trucks that are essential to getting the job done. Here in the North State, that means Advanced Automotive of Reading, where they pride themselves on old-fashioned honesty, quality personal attention, and personal responsibility to get the work done right the first time. Why else would they be able to offer a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty on their repairs? Every mechanic at Advanced Automotive is an ASC-certified master technician who takes pride in their work, something that's earned Advanced Automotive recognition from RepairPal.com, the leading provider of auto repair and maintenance information to consumers. From the family minivan, your daughter's first car, or a yard full of company vehicles, Advanced Automotive should be your go-to repair shop. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 5756 F Westside Road. Call 244-4423 or check the customer reviews at RepairPal.com.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstrup. Republican Senator Dean Heller of Nevada said Friday he opposes the GOP bill that would scuttle much of an overhaul of Obamacare that would complicate the task that party leaders face in guiding the banner legislation through the Senate. Heller, who faces a difficult re-election fight next year, said he would vote against the bill in the current form but did not rule out supporting a revamped version. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer says President Trump is willing to engage with all senators on the bill.
The president is very supportive of the bill. He wants to work with all the members to improve it in any way that can help facilitate that passage and make it a stronger bill.
Heller is the fifth GOP senator to come out against the current bill. Facing unanimous Democratic opposition, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell must get yes votes from 50 of the 52 GOP senators to avoid a defeat. President Trump says his version of White House meetings with FBI James Comey was always the truth.
My story didn't change. My story was always a straight story.
The president's now admitted there are no recordings of the talks he had with Comey. In an interview with Fox and Friends, he's hinting at a motivation for his tweet last month suggesting there are tapes. The president's also casting some doubt on Special Counsel Bob Mueller, who's overseeing the federal Russia investigation.
Well, he's very, very good friends with Comey. Which is very bothersome.
Asked if Mueller should step down from the probe because of that, the president says, we'll have to see. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
Louisiana Congressman Steve Scalise continues to show signs of improvement as he recovers from his gunshot wounds suffered during an attack at a congressional charity baseball practice 2 weeks ago. The majority whip is out of intensive care at MedStar Washington Hospital Center, but remains in fair condition. Scalise is said to, the doctors say, that he should make a full recovery and walk. News and analysis at townhall.com.
Amazing to realize, but you know, it's been almost 2 years I've been talking with you about Relief Factor, and I can tell you I've been continually inundated with testimonials. This is Michael Medved, and I've received thousands of testimonials that come in telling me how excited people are to be out of pain, like Bob from Ohio, who writes, I had a herniated disc in my back in 1984. I started taking Relief Factor, and for the first time, I have been completely out of constant, sometimes excruciating pain. I'm now able to work in the yard, around the house, and do my job in comfort. This is a great product. That's the end of the quote. If you're struggling with ongoing back or neck pain, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, or general muscle pain, aches, pains of any kind, do what tens of thousands of others have done so successfully. Go to ReliefFactor.com and order their 3-week quick start for just $19.95. 1-800-500-8384. That's 1-800-500-8384.
Britain's famed Glastonbury Music Festival embraced an unlikely headline act this weekend. Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn, the 68-year-old, received a rock star welcome from thousands of festival goers who chanted, held up I Love Jeremy signs as he took to the main stage.
You know what it says? Build bridges, not walls.
Corbyn gave a wide-ranging speech on a number of issues he thinks Britain needs to deal with.
Is it right that so many people live in such poverty in a society surrounded by such riches? No, it obviously is not.
Even before his arrival, music fans at the festival were singing Oh, Jeremy Corbyn to the tune of Seven Nation Army. Troubled Japanese electronics giant Toshiba's chosen a U.S.-Japan consortium of three companies as the preferred bidder in its attempt to sell its lucrative chip business. More on these stories at townhall.com. Google's adding a bit more privacy to your Gmail account.
You'll still see ads in your Gmail feeds, but they'll no longer be targeted at you based on the contents of your emails. Beginning immediately, you'll be able to opt out. The changes bring consumer accounts in line with Gmail's business accounts, which never did do email scans. There are business reasons behind this. Google's hoping the change will clear up some confusion that may have stopped some people from purchasing a corporate account.
Wally Hines reporting. Another 20 Sears properties are closing. This time it's 18 Sears stores, two Kmart stores. Back in 2015, 235 Sears and Kmart store locations were sold to Seritage as part of an agreement in which Sears leases the stores back from the real estate company with an exit clause if they're unprofitable. Stores will close in mid-September. Liquidation sales will begin by the end of June. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Good, honest, reliable. More than two decades ago, an auto repair shop opened in Reading based on those simple principles. Advanced Automotive is still family-owned, continuing on with those same ideals. So simple, yet rare in today's world. Modern cars and light trucks have grown more complex in the past 20-plus years, but those founding concepts still hold just as much importance when it comes to safety, reliability, and value for your dollar. Advanced Automotive of Reading promises that your vehicle will be serviced confidently by a technician with the training and knowledge to make professional repairs. Read what your friends and neighbors have to say about Advanced Automotive by going to RepairPal.com, where you can get an instant estimate of what you can expect to pay for your service or repair. Honest work at a fair price. It's not all that complicated. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 244-4423, or stop by 5756 F West Side Road.
And welcome back to the second hour of Boomer Tech Radio. I am Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
I'm Alan Belongi.
And I got to turn Alan's mic up just a little bit more there because I think he's a little off mic. Try that now.
I'm Alan Belongi.
There you go. Now I can hear you just fine. We do goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, tech news you could use. And each and every week we broadcast and podcast and talk about just about anything that strikes our fancy having to do with the world of technology. Basically, if it's got wires or maybe gets from point A to point B by wires or wirelessly, you're going to hear about it on this show.
Or quantumly.
Or quantumly. We're actually going to talk about that later in this hour.
Cool stuff.
I've been playing around with this stuff for a good long time. I had a Apple II compatible computer. It's still in my garage, and one of these days, live on the show, we're going to plug that sucker in.
See if it turns on.
Pop in the 5 1/4 floppy disk and see if it boots up.
Well, I think you should do this like a, make a YouTube out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, and
yeah.
Then put it on eBay and sell it.
Because I do have the Franklin disks, the operating system disks, somewhere. Now, they've been sitting in a garage in 120 degree heat for years.
Well, I don't think it gets to be 120 in there, but it gets stinking hot in there.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to deteriorate the media.
Reading summers don't do too well on technology.
Yeah.
The disks that I made copies of the operating system on were made by a company called Elephant, and their brand, their logo is Never Forgets.
That's very cute.
So that's going to be a great video. If the discs have not frozen in the sleeves, if they still spin freely, that will be a very interesting thing.
Frozen-melted in the sleeves.
Yeah, yeah. Because
might be in better shape than you think.
Magnetic tape tends to break up. So around that same time, if you wanted to go online, there was no internet in 1987. To speak of. If you wanted to go online...
I remember back in those days. Yeah. I was the 1 year old. I totally remember those days. 87. Those were good years. Didn't have a lot to worry about back then.
There was no internet, yes. We didn't have smartphones. We had tape machines.
I remember.
My God. And we kept our memos on stone tablets. We had to run from the mastodons. Anyway, it wasn't easy to get pictures from point A to point B, especially when you're limited. We were limited by a 300 baud, or if you were really styling, 1200 baud modem.
That's a lot of bauds.
That's
ooh,
a lot. Ooh,
man, that was fast. 1200.
That's true. Yeah.
You were smoking.
Yeah, you were smoking if you had a 1200. In fact, for a time, CompuServe, which actually predated America Online, charged you a premium price if you wanted to use the 2400 baud modem.
Well, that's no different than having paying for a different tier
for the tier,
yeah, your internet access is the same way. If you want the fastest internet access, you're going to pay more.
And if you think your internet service provider fees are high, back in that day, and this is in the 80s, they wanted like $6 an hour to be online, billable in quarter hour increments.
Oof.
Yeah. It were
that
not
could
cheap.
Add up.
It did add up very quickly.
You found this out on a personal experience, did
out,
you?
I found this out the hard way.
Yes. That's like your kid making phone calls or
yeah,
whatever,
yeah,
right?
Or downloading a bunch of content.
Yeah, downloading a bunch of content or making in-app purchases.
Yeah, in-app purchases. Those were the in-app purchases of the day. anyway, it was 30 years ago this week that an engineer at CompuServe came up with a way to transmit pictures from point A to point B using what is now known as the what was then known as the graphics interchange format, or GIF, or
GIF.
Now there have been fist fights over what's the proper pronunciation for the graphics interchange format, and we are borrowing a studio with which to make this recording, so that's why you heard a phone go off, and we're all looking at each other going, who's going to answer that? Anyway.
No one's going to answer that.
That's right.
It's more like all looking at each other going, how many times is that going to ring?
Yeah. Trying to figure out. Anyway, this was the first, yeah, it was June the 15th, 1987. CompuServe introduced the GIF format to provide a color image downloadable file. And, of course, one of the first things everybody wanted to download was porn pictures.
That's the innovator of everything. That's what pushes everything forward. That's why the internet exists now. Hey, that, you know what?
That sounds
true.
There's eyes rolling.
I am. It's just like, seriously, people?
That's
the first thing you think of, right?
That's why paintings were made. That's why photographs were made.
I know.
You know.
It's like...
Written literature.
What else do you think about during the day?
Yeah, well...
If that was the first thing you got to share, what else are you thinking about during the day?
10 times an hour, right?
Yeah. I guess.
CompuServe encouraged the adoption of the format by offering downloadable conversion utilities.
I remember that.
By December of 87, an Apple II GS user could view pictures created on an Atari ST or Commodore 64. Now, this is way before PDF files. This is way before the stuff we take for granted.
JPEGs,
yeah. GIFs compared to JPEGs are much, much larger. JPEGs use a compression, whereas GIFs do not use a compression routine. So if a big picture is a big, big file. So happy birthday to the GIF or GIF, as the case may be.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, and there was a nice little saying that you came across. It was very cute.
Well, there have literally been fist fights over what is the proper pronunciation of the term. Is it GIF or JIF? And the people who created the format would like to say that choosy developers choose JIF.
Well, you didn't have a lot of options.
Just like the peanut butter. So, but whether it be GIF or GIF, it is still a file format that is in use. We see a lot of, it's fairly easy to put multiple, pictures in the same file and have them sequentially run so that we get an animated, GIF.
That's what it's used for most of the
mostly these days.
Because animated PNGs just are a little big.
Well, and the compression makes them, makes it hard for them to work right.
Right.
I like PNGs though because they're sharp.
Yeah. Well, they can be. But we've come
it's
so far.
Lossless.
Yeah. We've yes. come so far in graphics that is just amazing. So happy birthday to the developers. Those were the earliest days and just 30 years ago.
I remember the conversion programs.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And I was definitely not a computer geeky type, but I was a user. Absolutely a user.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Alan, now Alan comes in here because his eyes are so much better than mine. He shows up with all his stories on his phone. Now, we talked about people who are watching their movies on their phones.
That won't last long.
Yeah.
I give you another 10 years, maybe. And
I will get robotic eyes.
Yes. So by then, that'll probably be the case. We'll all have cyber eyes.
Yeah.
You know, and you'll give some kind of little twitchier nose like Bewitched and, you know, zoom, it'll, you know, zoom in on something.
And you squint and it zooms.
Yeah, exactly.
Steve Austin.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't know the references, look it up. Cyborg, too, you know, locutus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Resistance is futile, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Probably
anyway,
so.
You had another story.
So they've continued to try to make AI better and better, right? And recently they had AI beat people at Go, which was one of the most infinitely difficult board games that
right,
we have.
Right. Oh
yeah,
permutations.
Oh yeah, you could spend a lifetime learning that.
So they also have been teaching
Researchers
have been teaching AI how to play video games. You know, somewhat simple Atari games, but they're still way more complex to a computer than a board game is, which
right.
has a certain number of states
sure.
that you can adjust.
Well, and the rules are usually pretty easy in
yeah.
a board game.
Right.
I mean, it's a finite set of rules.
But video games generally have a lot of moving objects
right.
and changing objectives.
Exactly.
And it all takes place in real time, yeah. and it's not turn-based in any way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So to really try to test it out, artificial intelligence researchers taught this machine, this AI, to play Mrs. Pac-Man on the Atari.
Wow, 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 wow.
Which is notoriously difficult because the original...
I never got past, like, level 3.
Right. The original Pac-Man for the Atari was beaten fairly easily by many people, so they specifically made Mrs. Pac-Man to be very, very difficult on the old
yeah,
system.
Yeah, yeah.
So, in
I never
order...
played it.
In you order for it to, like,
never played it.
Fully figure out how to...
there are 256 levels. Yeah.
Right. And this machine, the AI, eventually did something that no person was able to do, which was actually max out the score in the game, which is to play it until it got enough points that it just couldn't keep track anymore, which, again, no one's ever done before. And it did this not by just teaching one routine the best way to, like, figure out how to go from A to B or whatever.
So I had to adapt.
Right. What it does instead is it essentially has a whole bunch of small subroutines working together. Actually, they all work individually. Like, you have one subroutine that says, I want to get this pellet on the screen. And this subroutine says, I want to get this pellet on the screen. And this subroutine says, I want you to eat that big pellet. And this subroutine says, I want to go eat that ghost or whatever when it's eatable.
Multitasking.
Right. But they all these individual subroutines work just for their own particular goal. And then they have another one, kind of like the boss of a company,
a referee,
actually decide between all these different options which way it should go. So it's not just one program learning how to play the game. It's a whole bunch of smaller programs sitting there figuring out the thing it needs to do to accomplish this objective, and then a different program taking in all the advice, essentially, from all the different things doing what they want to do, and then deciding the best course of action
so
for everybody.
Computing by committee.
Right, essentially.
Yeah,
yeah,
playing the game by committee. A couple things here, though. One is that no human mind may work like that.
Right.
And no human mind can process the data that quickly.
No.
That's part of the other thing. But
because it's got 160 different opinions to weigh.
Right. And it very quickly.
Very quickly.
Can do that. We can't do that as humans.
No. But we do a lot of things like that subconsciously.
True.
Because, I mean, we can look at when we play games, we look at the board, and there's a whole bunch of things going on in our head which we aren't actively aware of.
Right.
You know, for peripheral vision, we're like, okay, we can't go over there, but we don't ever think we can't go over there because there's a ghost over there or whatever when you're playing Pac-Man. But you just know you just don't go over there. So there's a ton of things going on in your head. Maybe it's more than 160. Who knows? But
maybe.
But then when you make it for the AIs, it's trying to figure out, obviously, they have to make it from the ground up.
So there's something here that no human mind has achieved that, but a human mind programmed that.
Right.
This was not a machine that figured out how to do this by itself.
No.
This was all human input into the process.
Well, So
there is a human mind behind this.
There is still a positive and negative, like the machine learning for it, because each individual subroutine within the game learns as it plays what's the best way to achieve this one goal I've been given.
But it's programmed to do that
right.
by a human.
Right. So 160 of these little subroutines are constantly learning and figuring out the best way to achieve its objective, and then the CEO, essentially, of all of them is figuring out the best way to coordinate all this information together.
My guess is that if you gave some human long enough time, they would figure out how to maximize all that and achieve the same, but the AI is just much faster at doing it.
Right. At a certain point, you just don't have the reaction time as a person to do all of this.
Right.
Whereas a computer can.
Right. The same thing. And they're not a computer isn't distracted by emotion or the door slamming or the phone ringing or any of that kind of stuff.
Sitting there playing this stupid game for 3 hours.
Yeah, that's true. It's a tireless.
Right.
Yeah, the AI is tireless.
It doesn't get bored.
I got to finish this level, but I really got to go.
Yeah. have a cold that day and just not at the top of their game, so to speak.
So that's just more steps along the way of how different ways to get machine learning and AI to solve its problems.
Yeah. Fascinating.
I want to talk about Texture.
Texture. Go ahead.
Texture is a subscription service that's for magazines, and I've been messing around in that more lately because I'm kind of tired of Facebook nothingness. There's not much on there. Yeah, it's a mental roadkill, right? And it's just, I don't know, seems like the same rehashed things. Anyway, enough about Facebook. So Texture is a subscription service for magazines. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the magazines out there. There's a wide range of topics you can pick from. It's got sports, cooking.
Well over 100 magazines.
Right, and there's more being added all the time.
Yeah.
And these are digital versions of the print copy. So if you were to go to the Barnes & Noble or wherever, the newsstand at the grocery store, whatever, and pick up a copy of these magazines,
I'll pick on one thing.
Food Network
has
their magazine. National Geographic, it doesn't matter. You pick up a copy of those, you would see exactly the same thing on Texture that you see in those magazines. Now, messing around with this, I found that I don't particularly care for it on my PC for two reasons. One is that I need a better resolution screen to have
pixels.
That sharp. That there's not enough pixels on my screen. And
your PC is landscape.
That's right. PC is held in landscape. Well, what it does is it shows
wider
you...
Right,
which is wider than high, and what it does is it shows you two pages in the magazine as if you have the magazine open in front of you. Well, that's not how we read a magazine. So I don't bother with Texture on my PC. I wish there was a feature that you could do that, but on the tablet, it's fabulous.
Well,
the image is sharp, and if I turn my tablet in the portrait mode...
Mm-hmm.
You get one page. Now, a lot of magazines are written in column format like a newspaper.
Right.
And the print is small, and I have old eyes, and so I need to have the print larger. That's easy. You have your touch screen. You can just enlarge that column and then scroll through and move over around the page because you're not going to be looking at a page full of print or an area full of print. You're not going to be looking at everything all at once anyway. That's not how we see it. And if there is a page that has a full picture, well, then you can just display that picture. And so this is where I found and I think the tablet format is really more what they were after anyway, but you definitely need to put it in portrait mode, I think. If they have a two-page spread, well, then you can, you know, display it on your tablet and look at features by enlarging the two-page spread, but by turning it back to landscape. But if you do not have a touch screen on your computer, It's a miserable experience.
Yeah. Well, if you get a fancy enough monitor, you can actually switch it to portrait mode.
Yep. Yeah.
Because mine, you just lift it up, turn it around, and then hit a button, and it adjusts everything. Yeah. So
that's what I'm saying is that if you have my laptop, my Dell laptop.
Oh, my iPad does that automatically. Yeah.
Right. But my laptop at home has lower resolution screen. Yeah. It's not touch screen, and I can't do that.
No, you can't really rip the monitor off the laptop.
And but there are laptops that are made that way that you can do that with.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's just an experience with texture. There's a lot about it I really like. You can set up your own library. You can read back issues. I mean, you could spend hours in there looking at the magazines that are on there. If you're looking for something esoteric like ABH Science Weekly, that's not in there. That you know, we're still going to be stuck with a paper subscription. The other thing, too, is cost. It's about $10 a month.
Yep.
And that's $120 a year, which if you only subscribe to three magazines that are on here, you know, you're really, that's not cost effective. If you're, a lot of magazines, you can pick them up from anywhere from $10 to $20 for a year subscription.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, let's say you have the expensive ones, three subscriptions at $20 is $60 for a year. But the difference is two things. One is that with texture, you have a lot of variety, and there's magazines there that you
can
maybe
search them.
You can search them. You maybe have been curious about, or that you don't really want to look at every issue, or there's one you want to explore, but you don't want to subscribe to. You can pick and choose what you do. And the other thing is you can bookmark that in
articles,
there.
Yeah,
and you don't have all of these magazines sitting around.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's,
it's a lot more
nice.
eco-friendly.
It's eco-friendly if you're worried about that.
And if you ever needed to like throw it away, you don't have to, because I'm sure you can go back and read old issues.
Absolutely.
So that's another good
thing. And you can bookmark, let's say it's Food Network magazine. You can bookmark a recipe, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can also go to the Food Network website and, you know, get stuff. But there's an All Recipes magazine in
that's
there.
That's fun.
Stuff like that. It's really neat. And so there's a number of genre that I like to follow, and there's a whole bunch of magazines that I wouldn't subscribe to because I don't want the whole issue. And what's nice about texture is you really do get your money's worth from that perspective. Let's say you want to check out five different cooking magazines. You can kind of flip through it and, oh, I want to read that or I want to read that. And it's not like you have to buy the whole issue.
Right.
To do that, you can check it out.
And as it learns your preferences, it will start floating articles that are similar to articles you've already read.
Yeah, well, you know, that could be handy.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a section of a magazine, you know, they always have feature sections that's the same every letters to the editor isn't just an example, that kind of thing. It will maybe pinpoint that for you every time.
But even if you just read nerd magazines, and you're not interested in
home
and garden,
there's a ton of them in there.
Just in the nerd magazines under science technology, we have CNET, Macworld, Make, PC Magazine, PC World, Popular Mechanics,
Popular Science,
Smithsonian, Sound and Vision, and Wired.
Right.
All you could want.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, maybe you're interested in an annual issue of some kind from Wired or something. You know, you don't have to buy the whole subscription. So if you were to subscribe to all of those, not only would you have a mass of paper coming.
Oh, yeah.
But
your postman would hate you.
Then your $120 a year is eaten up more than.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's all a matter of getting in there. And I find myself at first, I said, okay, well, the magazines that I subscribe to are all in there. So I said, okay, I don't need to renew that, and then I don't have to have all the paper sitting around. I can pick and choose, and it's portable. There's a lot to be said for hands-on.
Absolutely.
There's no question. But, you know, this is portable. It goes anywhere with you. If you left it home, forgot it, whatever, yeah, it requires batteries to charge your screen and make it work. But what I'm finding is that the actual number of magazines that I'm reading is expanding.
Yes.
And there's the value in my subscription is the fact that I'm reading more magazines, and it's interesting to get other takes on the same.
Right. And of all the magazines that are carried, Texture has the new and noteworthy stories, the top 10 reads, so you can see what's trending across all your magazines.
There's things like that. So, you know, those kind of things I'm not so worried about. I don't need it picking and choosing things for me to to read, but on the other hand, a scan through that's not so bad. It can be a little maybe slow to, you know, if you pick genres, I think, pick titles, go through and look at the titles first. But it's very intuitive how to use it.
Yes.
It's not difficult to use at all.
Yeah.
And it, you, just a little bit of poking around and you'll have great success.
If you know how to use a magazine, you know how to use this thing.
Well, if you're familiar with a touch screen and little hamburger menus and things like that, it's like most any kind of tablet experience.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not complicated. You don't have to drill down through a lot of layers to get to something meaningful or useful. And the features that are on there are kind of intuitive.
Now, we will give credit where credit is due. We heard about Texture on Leo Laporte's Tech Guy show.
Yep.
They are not a sponsor for us.
No.
We would like to have them as a
sponsor. Well, you have to listen to the competition.
Yeah, well, you do. To get an idea of what we should be doing. But we're going to go ahead and take
That we copy them.
We do not copy. We try not to. I don't think we're like any other show that's on the web or
we'd
on
like broadcast. To think so, anyway.
Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda and Alan. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour break, and we will be back after we pay a few bills.
It takes you to your place of work. It gets your kids to school, practice, recitals, and to visit friends and relatives. It takes you on your adventures, and it brings you home again safely. It's your car or light truck, and for most of us, it's our second biggest investment. So when your vehicle needs routine maintenance or major repairs, it just makes sense to go with the very best. Here in Shasta County, that means one thing: Advanced Automotive. Advanced Automotive is Redding's only shop that's listed on RepairPal.com, part of a nationwide network of shops that are regularly evaluated for superior training, guaranteed fair prices, and excellent customer reviews. And Advanced Automotive backs up their work with something you won't get anywhere else, a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty. Don't just take my word for it. Log on to RepairPal.com, enter your make, model, and zip code, and read what your friends and neighbors have to say. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Redding, 244-4423. What better way to enjoy a Sunday brunch than with great music at View 202? Linda Bott, Bruce Kalin, and Bernie Baker are back on the veranda with all your jazz favorites served up in style. This Sunday from 11:30 to 2, treat yourself, invite family and friends, and savor good music, great food, and the best view in Redding. View 202 on Hempstead Drive. Call 226-8439 to make your reservation.
Join Aaron Ryan, Bill Cundiff, and Bob Martin for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon till 2. Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media soundbites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join us this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. And we welcome your suggestions for future topics and guests at wethepeopleradio.us. We the People, now on Sundays from noon till 2 on AM 1460 KCNR. When you need prompt, dependable transportation, you can count on Redding Yellow Cab. At Redding Yellow Cab, they have a deep commitment to serve the public and provide dependable first-rate service. Whether you're heading out for a night on the town, need to get to work, or you're just running errands, relax and let Redding Yellow Cab do the driving for you. Redding Yellow Cab is your number one choice for reliable, friendly transportation and clean, comfortable cabs. Give them a call at 222-1234. That's 222-1234.
This is Terry Oxley, pastor of True Life Church in Bella Vista. Murders, riots, violence, terrorism, hatred, racism, all result from a failed liberal progressive ideology. When you take pliable minds and instill violent, hate-filled rhetoric into them, you create mentally unstable individuals. Understand, there are evil people in this world who use their religion and beliefs as justification for their violent, evil actions. Your best protection from this corrupt ideology is having a sincere relationship with Jesus Christ. If you are looking for a no-nonsense church that's not afraid to talk about current issues and yet teaches the Bible, I invite you to be our guest. Our Sunday services are at 10 a.m. We are located on Deschutes Road, one block south of Highway 299 in Bella Vista. You can visit our website at TrueLifeReading.com. We hope to see you soon, and remember, it's worth the ride.
From working families to small businesses or government agencies, it's important to have quality care for the cars and light trucks that are essential to getting the job done. Here in the North State, that means Advanced Automotive of Reading, where they pride themselves on old-fashioned honesty, quality personal attention, and personal responsibility to get the work done right the first time. Why else would they be able to offer a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty on their repairs? Every mechanic at Advanced Automotive is an ASC-certified master technician who takes pride in their work, something that's earned Advanced Automotive recognition from RepairPal.com, the leading provider of auto repair and maintenance information to consumers. From the family minivan, your daughter's first car, or a yard full of company vehicles, Advanced Automotive should be your go-to repair shop. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 5756 F Westside Road. Call 244-4423 or check the customer reviews at RepairPal.com.
Welcome back to one more segment of Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda and Alan. The theme music you've been hearing throughout the show is 8-Bit Junkie, composed and performed by George Wood. It is off the PodSafe Music Network. We have used it ever since this show started about 8 years ago, and it is used with George's permission for the Boomer Tech Radio theme.
Thank you, George.
Yes, thank you, George. He's a neat guy. I actually had an email exchange with him when I was asking for his permission, so we don't have to worry about a takedown notice from George, because I got the email still. Actually, it's kind of cool. I did a couple of years ago a video, and the composer performer Moby had a website where you could apply to use some of his compositions for not-for-profit projects. And I availed myself of it, filled out the form and all that. Well, YouTube took the video down for copyright violation.
Thanks.
And that was right on cue. And I wrote them back and I said, "Hey guys," and I copied the email and the form and all that. They put it back up.
Oh, well, at least that's nice of them.
Yeah.
Jerks.
So yeah, well, and I understand, you know, artists deserve to be compensated for their work, and there's a lot of ripoff on YouTube.
But, absolutely.
When I actually indicated in my notes for the video that I had permission to use this piece of music, they just wiped it out anyway. So fortunately, they didn't just erase it. So, Alan, I remember when we had you on some time back, and you were of a mind that they were going to have to take your Windows 7 away at gunpoint. But you have since changed your tune on that.
Yeah.
You adopted Windows 10 because Microsoft shoved it down your throat, for one thing.
Well, I was just buying a new computer, just consulted with everybody that I knew that had been using Windows 10. They're like, "Yeah, it's fine." So I was like, "All right, fine, I'll get it when I built my new one."
Yeah. And Windows 10 is actually, you know, I know a few people who are still holding on dear because they got so burned when they went from XP to Vista or 8.
Or if they tried 8, yeah.
Yeah. That they were like, "No, Microsoft screws up." Well, Microsoft is sort of like Alien and Star Trek movies in that every other one sucks.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say sucks, but well, it's certainly not as good as the last one.
Well, the classic Star Trek movies. Abrams so far has done two for two. So.
Right. Well, but some would argue with that. But Windows 10, which apparently you can now get for essentially $93 on Amazon.
There's three Star Trek movies, the ones, by the way.
Oh. Of the new ones?
Yeah.
No. You're right. Anyway,
can't keep up with these things.
Yeah,
I lose track of which one I've seen. At any rate, Windows 10, as I mentioned, is apparently available for $93 more or less at Amazon.
Right.
Which isn't too bad. I mean, if you're going to install some software, it's considerably more expensive than that. So this article in CNET says there's 6 display settings that you should be using in Windows 10 to make sure that you shall we say, fine-tune your display. Now, much has been made about having the screens on, looking at bluish screens.
The blue light special.
Right, yeah. Which you don't perceive as blue, but it's emitting a lot of blue light. And right. So as a human, physiologically, that has an effect.
That's daylight, and you should be awake and watching for the predators.
That's right, exactly. So one of the features that is on there is there's a night light feature, if you want to look at it. And this is to help you set the color temperature.
Right. It rolls
display.
Off the blues and,
yeah,
and pushes the reds.
Pushes your
changes the
display.
Color temperature in Kelvin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It changes the color temperature to make it warmer or less blue, if you will. So that's a good way to that's a good one to do, particularly if you're looking at it in the evening and whatnot. So you're not messing with your body clock.
And phones and tablets are starting to do this as well more and more.
Yeah, yeah. There's been some research about how it's not too good on your eyes to be looking at blue light all the time.
That too.
But yeah, I noticed on my phone that there was an option when I got the new S7, well, new to me, and it had a blue light filter option. So I was like, oh, let's poke it on there. And yeah, it got warmer, but I was like, might as well leave it on.
Yeah,
why not?
And you can actually set it so it comes on like a couple hours before your bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's still recommended that you don't be gazing at a screen and then promptly, turn off the computer and go lay down, because your brain is still, running at high speed. Unless, of course, you're one of those people who games until you do waffle face.
Face plant in your keyboard.
In
yes.
First time I heard that phrase, I said, I have never heard a more descriptive phrase in my life.
Waffle face.
Yeah, and was that based on personal experience? Have you had personal experience with
waffle
face?
Probably.
Yeah, it's just a visual, because all of a sudden you snap awake and you realize that half an hour just went somewhere.
I think it's time to go to bed when that happens, right?
Yep,
obviously,
yep.
The blue light isn't making much difference at that point.
Nope.
You're falling asleep in your chair.
All right. So if you've got a nice, shiny, new 4K display, I have display envy. Well, yours isn't a 4K, is
it? Not quite 4K. It's more than 1080p, though.
Oh, okay. It's just 2.5K or something.
Mm, it's 2550 by 19 something.
But this thing's like a 36-inch monster, isn't it?
35 inches.
Yeah.
You can't even see that well.
Well, if it's got a slight, but it's not a curve, is it?
Nope,
no.
Just nice flat screen.
That's what Samsung wants to sell you as a curve. Now, I've got 24s side by side, and what's interesting is that at first the bezel really bugs you. After a while, you just kind of tune it out.
Yep, you don't even notice it.
But if you get a really nice new display, and some of your apps look blurry because they're not scaling properly, Creators Update, which is the new version of Windows 10, lets you override the dots per inch setting so individual apps will read properly on a high-resolution display. To do that, you go to the App Choose Properties, click on Compatibility, and check for a box for Override High DPI Scaling, and then choose System Enhanced from the pull-down menu, and your app should then look properly nifty sharp.
And the reason why it does that is because, when you make a program, you make it so many dots wide and so many
Absolutely.
Dots big
yeah.
or long. And so when you add more dots overall to the screen, we're using dots instead of pixels, then it's either going to be really small on the screen, since there's that many more dots on there,
right.
or they're going to have to zoom in on it, which
right.
can make it look fuzzy, or you see the
exactly.
individual dots,
the
or whatever.
Aliasing or stair stepping on the sides,
yeah. right?
Like
and
that.
So this
doesn't
does
have
it,
as much data,
right? This does its best to kind of rejigger the edges and the everything to make it look nicer.
You can also, of course, use Windows 10 scaling options. There's an option for scale and layout. And I know people who complain about this because they will bring up a program on a higher resolution display, and it'll be a postage stamp in the middle of their screen. Brent, I've heard you complain about this.
I've had that happen. It's like, what?
Yeah.
And it's so obvious how to fix this, too. I'm being sarcastic. This whole phraseology of go to properties and compatibility, okay, that might be kind of obvious, but override high DPI scaling behavior. Oh, now there's some phraseology.
That's
an everyday person's everyday lexicon.
Yeah.
So you know the programmers have done this. It makes imminent sense to them, but it's like reading a foreign language.
Well, if you
fortunately,
go to,
there's help sites.
Right, right,
you know.
Like this. And, of course, you listen to this show. If you go into display settings, there's an option for scale and layout. Windows will make a recommendation. Play around with it to find the best balance between the amount of space it occupies on a screen and how legible it is.
Another thing you can do is use your display's native resolution. And I'm like, why don't they just say default? Because every time you hook up a monitor or whatever, or if it's a laptop, and you know, the monitor is attached
right.
already, it will figure out how to maximize the view.
Right. Well,
it doesn't always do that.
Right. Default kind of implies a software issue where this is what the software like kind of is, well, going to use unless you change a setting, whereas native is how many dots are on the picture or how many dots are on the monitor.
Okay.
That's what it exists. It's natural. It's how many are there.
More phraseology.
Right.
Right.
When you plug that flat plug into your display should tell your computer's graphics card, I am a such and such display. I am a ViewSonic 24-inch blah, 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 and this is my resolution. Or the graphics card will actually have a table in its memory that says, okay, if I'm looking at this, the two actually say hello to each other, and if I'm looking at this display, I should set this resolution. 99% of the time that works,
yep.
But on older systems, or if you're using display, now DisplayPort sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't, you may have to go in and fiddle with the display resolution, especially if you're trying to tie into an older flat screen or something, you're going to have to fiddle with the resolution. Apple, you got to do that a lot.
Yeah.
You got to really fiddle around with the settings. Apple's pretty easy. You simply go into your preferences off the Apple menu, which is the little Apple icon on the top, and then you can, there's a little slider so you can try different settings and see which one comes out looking best, because you can look past the window and at your display and see what your optimum setting
that's
is.
That's better than having a window come up with this little tiny picture in there. You can't tell whether the right. detail's there or not. But the way to fix this is to go back to that scale and layout if there's some problems and see if you can lower screen resolution from there rather than trying to do it wholesale and see if there's some problems. I don't run into this very often where things don't show up very well because the resolution of the screen is such. What I find mostly resolution of the screen is how much of a web page, for instance, can I see and the size of things.
Yeah, and do you have a big black border around everything?
Or, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now Windows has a built-in color calibration tool, and you can actually now this is a used to be if you plugged in a VGA monitor, what you got was what you got. You didn't have a whole lot of color calibration that you could do. HDMI displays give you a little more calibration.
You'd have some options on the monitor itself, but that wasn't the computer giving out different colors.
Right.
Right. On the calibrate color display tool on Windows 10, again, this is in the control panel. If you calibrate your color display, you can go through a number of tests to adjust the gamma, the brightness, contrast, and color balance. And the tool will show you examples so you know what to look for to get the best results. And this audio or video files were doing this for years. You had a test disc, and that's what the colored bars with the gray and black squares at the bottom, called a plooge pattern, were about, was to get the optimum balance on a display.
There's even some video games that do that in the beginning because you know, they want to create a certain kind of atmosphere
right,
with whatever
right.
the darkness levels are.
Yeah.
And so they're like, turn down your contrast or brightness or whatever
so you
until
can just see this square.
Just barely see this or whatever.
Yeah.
And to try to give it the right kind of atmosphere for the feeling of whatever it is they're trying to convey.
Oh, yeah, and it fine-tunes it to your eyes.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is the final tip here is at the completion of the color calibration, there's an option that's what's called clear type tuner. And it's sort of like going to the optometrist and going through one of those eye tests. It's like, well, is number one better or number two?
One or
two. And you have to go, they both
two.
Look like the same.
Yeah,
some of them are
they
real.
They both look like.
Some are obvious,
they
though.
They both look like hell.
You know, no, some are real obvious, though.
Yeah.
That's a lot sharper than that one. So it's very much like that. And what the tool does is it shows you some different examples of text, and you just pick which one looks best to you.
And hopefully you get to a little more.
Yeah, a little
calibrated for your eyeballs.
Clarity or you know, sharpness to what it is that you're viewing. So there are ways to do this. It just kills me. My brother wants to just turn on the machine and, you know, have it sort of be self-adjusting and that sort of thing. And I imagine with time that will be the case. But he's maintenance. So I had a conversation with him the other day, and we had bought him a smartphone as a Christmas present. And he has this ancient track phone with a lot of hours on it. He's trying to get rid of all those minutes before he starts messing with the smartphone. And I said, when was the last time you turned the smartphone on? Oh, I don't know. Maybe 3 or 4 months. And he says, I've been keeping it charged, though. And I said, well, that's good, but you have to realize the smartphone is a computer.
About 2 days worth of
It's a very small computer, but it's a computer. And I said, it needs updates.
It wants updates. Mm-hmm.
You will have updates forced on you, and they are good for you because they usually involve some sort of security patch and things like that. And he goes, oh, I didn't think of that. Well, let me turn it on. Well, look at that, he said. By golly, you're right. It's updating.
Yeah.
I said, well, just leave it be.
It'll be updating for 2 days.
Plugged in. Well, actually, it updated fairly quickly. Mm. But you know, he was like, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so that's the beginning of my little commentary here, is that these devices are very sophisticated and they do require maintenance.
Yeah.
And how are you supposed to know? How are you supposed to find out? Some of it's automatical. I'll use that word, you know, sort of like.
Automagic.
Yeah, automatical. And use that made-up word purposely here. And it's how are you supposed to learn these things? I'm lucky. I have an in-house technician that takes care of all this stuff in the form of Bob. But if you didn't know, I mean, I don't think I'd pay as much attention. If Bob wasn't around, I would definitely not know this stuff, and it would just be a little frustrating. So I understand my brother's like, you know, you don't get it. I don't want to mess with this stuff. There should be some kind of automated thing. Yeah, there should be an easy button for this for people who really don't want to mess with it. But you do have to maintain these devices.
It's better than it used to be.
Well, true. But, I mean, darn you, whichever company, software, package, gets forced upon you at the worst possible time when you're in the middle of something. Or, you know, it takes, do not shut off your computer. And 25 minutes later, it's still updating. Grr. It's like, okay, walk away overnight. I got other things to do. Like
go get a pizza.
Yeah, something like that, which you can't order because you don't have the computer on, right?
Yep. We were going to do kind of a quick talk over of the new iPad 10.5 and then the new Microsoft Surface, but we're going to hold that over because those are stories that we'll hold over. Let me just say, though, if you've been waiting for the iPad to buy, it looks like the new 10.5-inch iPad Pro is getting very good reviews. It is as powerful. Get this. The iPad Pro in benchmark tests is as powerful as a MacBook Air.
Wow.
That's pretty
sophisticated. That's impressive.
Yeah, that is very impressive.
So does that mean you're going to give up your tablet or whatever, your laptop there and go get one of those?
I
get your next cast off?
No, I have a MacBook 2012 unibody with an actual optical disc in it, and I'm going to wait for this thing to blow up or have, you know, ooze coming out of the bottom of it before I finally give it up.
My Dell laptop seems to be aging. Maybe I'll get the next golly gee whiz new bang tool. I get a new thing instead of your old stuff, although I do like that MacBook because it has a light keyboard.
It does.
I'm very jealous of that.
And one of the things that we like to cover on this show is not only the stuff that is just now hitting the market, but we do a lot of this. This is something that's right on the cutting edge. We've talked about battery technologies, the carbon nanotube batteries that really show incredible promise for packing a lot more energy into a smaller area. Alan has stumbled across a story that if this pans out, and we've all heard about technologies that really promise us the sun and moon and stars, and then you never hear from them again. But Alan's come across something that if this pans out, we're going to be thinking about communications, maybe even transportation in a whole different light.
Going to be thinking about a lot of different things in a whole new light.
And this isn't even just a new technology. It's like possibly a whole other field of physics, really. We've heard of quantum entanglement.
Yeah.
It gets difficult to like explain the specifics of it, but it essentially is you can create two different photons, which are the, you know, the electrons.
Bundles of light energy.
Yeah, little bits of light energy.
They're almost mythical.
Right, they exist, and we know they exist, but you can create them in such a way that they have quantum entanglement, which is some sort of strange force that where when you affect one, it'll affect the other one. And it doesn't seem to be limited by how close or far away they are. So they've done lab tests where they can create entangled things, photons, and move them into different areas. And then they'll still, if you essentially poke one, the other one will be affected as well.
Think about this.
This is really, really odd and goes against practically everything we know about physics. We have no idea why one gets affected by the other, even when they're nowhere near each other.
We're fighting Newton and Einstein at the same time on this one.
To a certain degree. So to explain quantum entanglement just a little bit, it's actually a physical phenomenon that occurs when, and this is from Wikipedia, that occurs when pairs or groups of particles are generated or interact in ways such that the quantum state of each particle cannot be described independently of the others.
Right. You poke one, it affects the other
exactly. one. Exactly. So it's like they're the same in after a fashion.
Right. But even when they're not in the same place.
Right.
Which is
really
weird.
That's really bizarre.
And it doesn't seem to take matter what the distance is. So
right.
we're
Time,
talking vast distances.
The reaction is simultaneous.
Right.
So the distance doesn't seem a factor, which could be meaning instantaneous across however distance there is. So what was the breakthrough that happened is a Chinese government created some quantum particles up in the satellite and then beamed the two particles that they made down to two different labs 750 miles apart from one another, and they retained their quantum entanglement state. So they still managed to affect one another even after they were generated up on the satellite and then beamed down to the two different labs.
And this isn't like the cold fusion thing where it was not replicatable experience.
Yeah. No, they've been
this
able
been
to
done
replicate
before,
this
right,
plenty
in
of
much
time.
Shorter distance.
But this was the first time they actually made the quantum particles in space and then sent them back down to the planet.
That
this is pure science fiction stuff, but
they're actually doing it,
and not exactly sure
the
how.
Implications for communications, the implications for computing, because right now the speed of our computers is limited by the speed of light.
How fast those little electrons can get across your board on your computer.
Correct.
So why would we be interested in this? One of the things
we're years from practical.
Of course, but the fact that we've been able to do it is just like anything else. This is phenomenal. So now, how to exploit it? But one of the directions that they're headed with this is possibly with communications. And the immediate obvious thing with this is that it would make it very difficult to hack that communication. It can't be intercepted.
No, it can't be intercepted because there's no like.
There's
detectable
no beam or
no
wire
beam.
Or
There's
anything
no physical
between the two objects.
Right. No actual physical connection.
So you're talking about the ultimate and secure point-to-point communication.
Right. Whatever.
If we can harness this technology.
Right. At the moment, you know, they can get one to move or be affected by the other one, but it's hard to pinpoint like how the other one's going to be affected.
But think about this: if you are trying to get into that, if you break into the communication, for instance. You can't hide it. It would be obvious that it's been hacked into. That's another aspect of this. So it's not like you could do this secretly.
Right.
Because what you do to one point affects all of them.
Right.
Or
I mean,
the other end.
The only way you could hack it would be, you know, get into the
physical
device
access,
that's
yeah.
observing the other one of the two quantum particles. That'd be the only way you could, quote unquote, hack it.
So this guy started in 2003, one of the scientists. He was a professor of quantum physics, University of Science and Technology in China, and they said he was crazy.
Yeah.
And so
well,
here, 14 years later,
they
he's
said
actually,
Edison was crazy.
Well, that's true. They thought
said
it was
Tesla
a,
was
they
crazy.
Thought it was a crazy idea, but that's because there's a lot about quantum physics that we and quantum mechanics that Well, I don't think we understand this very well.
Oh, no, we don't understand quantum mechanics at all.
Yeah.
Like, scientists have no idea why distance doesn't seem to be a factor in this stuff.
So maybe Star Trek's not too far away.
Maybe.
Dr. McCoy.
That, we're going to wrap.
Transporter.
Beam me up, Scotty. And with that, we wrap up this episode of Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda and Alan. Thank you very much for listening. Tell your friends about the podcast. Wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other.
Good, honest, reliable. More than two decades ago, an auto repair shop opened in Reading based on those simple principles. Advanced Automotive is still family-owned, continuing on with those same ideals. So simple, yet rare in today's world. Modern cars and light trucks have grown more complex in the past 20-plus years, but those founding concepts still hold just as much importance when it comes to safety, reliability, and value for your dollar. Advanced Automotive of Reading promises that your vehicle will be serviced confidently by a technician with the training and knowledge to make professional repairs. Read what your friends and neighbors have to say about Advanced Automotive by going to RepairPal.com, where you can get an instant estimate of what you can expect to pay for your service or repair. Honest work at a fair price. It's not all that complicated. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 244-4423, or stop by 5756 F West Side Road.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. Prime Minister Theresa May says the investigation into the Grenfell Tower fire last month has pointed to broader fire safety issues which have prompted London officials to evacuate four public housing towers.
We have urged local authorities to send in samples of cladding and materials on their tower blocks. These have been tested. Many of those have been found not to be up to the fire safety standards that are required, and that is why action has been taken.
Residents affected are expressing their displeasure after the Camden Council decided to empty about 800 households from five buildings Friday night amid worries about exterior insulation panels like the ones that were believed to have